Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 34 for September 24, 2009. This is Michael Loff. Tonight we are talking about relationships, finding and meeting those special people, whether it's just friendships or maybe something more on a personal level, people seeking intimacy. And how do we do that? Is it different for those of us who do not see? Do we pursue things differently? What do we look for? How do we overcome some of the stereotypes that we may have to deal with? I know some folks will only date other people who are visually impaired, while some feel they only want to date someone who is totally sighted to maybe compensate for the things that they cannot do themselves. So we're going to cover a wide variety of stuff. First, to announce and congratulate our winners for the podcast promotion that we did. Each person sending in one or more of their favorite podcasts will receive a free month of system access. And we chose three names, and those are Kim Kilpatrick, Jeff Green, and Eric Thornley. We congratulate and we thank all of you for your submissions. And by the end of this month, we will have our top 500 podcasts, the best of the best, at least according to our users. And of course, we'll always add and expand to it. And as always, you can give us suggestions, be it radio stations, podcasts, movies, anything else on your mind, resources at serotalk.com. My initial conversations with people suggested that a lot of people use the telephone to grow and develop their relationships with other people. But before we go there, I want to ask, have any of you used any online portals to meet someone of the opposite sex? Either some of the sites that we know of, like eHarmony.com or Match.com or Cupid.com. Have any of you used any online sites for pursuing relationships?
Scott, Sydney.
Mike in St. Louis.
Scott, I'm going to start with you, sir. Tell us about what you have done online, good or bad.
I have tried a couple of online portals. These are Australian portals, but one of them is US-based. But there's one called rsvforvictorpforpeter.com.au. It was an okay portal. The problem with it was that it was a very, very busy web page. And I just found that the quality of people on there was not what I expected. They just weren't my type. And some of the other sites, including the latest one I just tried called plentyoffish.com, is a worldwide portal. They've got captures when you want to message somebody that you find interesting on the site, and they change every 30 seconds. So at the time you've got your capture won't work, but you've got from either WebVisum or whatever, because it's changed. So I'm kind of not happy about that. So I think, honestly, from what I've tried, I think I prefer the phone way of doing things.
Okay, we'll definitely talk about that in just a moment. But Mike Arrigo, what have you done online, sir?
This was a few years ago with Match.com, and actually I did meet someone on there, and we hung out a few times. She eventually moved away. The thing about these sites is they are very busy. They do have a lot of stuff on them, so if you want to use one of those sites, certainly for the most part it's accessible, but you are going to be navigating quite a bit and take your time and read everything carefully. The one flaw that I found was that you could sign up and you could view profiles and you could see people's profiles, but you didn't know if the person you were sending it to was a paid member or not. So you could actually send somebody a wink or an email and you would not know if they were a paid member and able to respond to you. If you do want to have a picture of yourself, there's where the camera on your cell phone actually will come in handy quite a bit.
Have any of you used telephone-based chat line services?
Scott, Sydney.
Mike in St. Louis.
Okay, Scott, go ahead with your experiences, sir.
I've used a couple. I've used one called Lava Life. I think it's in the US in Sydney. It was okay. The thing I didn't like about it, I'm not saying anything negative against women here, but the ones that I found from Lava Life, they were either disappear after a couple of weeks after you chatted to them for a bit, or they had some sort of an unfortunate illness or something, and then after sort of talking for a short time, they just didn't want to contact you anymore, or they just went a bit funny, so I gave Lava Life a flick. The latest one I've been playing with is called Private Line. It's actually quite good. Some of the people I've chatted to there are quite friendly and they know what they want, and I just find the experience to be a lot better than what I have had here in Australia compared to Australian women. The ones on the phone anyway, either they mumble too quick and you can't understand them. I don't know, man. They just don't communicate, and that's sort of annoying to me. I just find that the US women that I've chatted to so far, they know what they want. They sort of outline in their ads what they're after. And the interface to the phone portal from Private Line is just one of the easiest portals I've ever used. Works well, and it's actually a very good service.
All right, Mr. Arrigo, what would you like to share with us tonight?
Well, I've also used Lava Life again. This was a couple of years ago. I still have two really good friends that I talk to and hang out with that I met off of there that we never dated, but we just became really good friends. I think it is wrong. I mean, the girls get free and the guys have to pay. You really have to sift through a lot of stuff to find really good people worth talking to. I just found a lot of people to be kind of, for lack of a better term, ghetto-ish. If you're willing to take the time, you can make some friends. Of course, you got to be careful, as with any dating service. Easy for people to mislead you on something like that, so you do have to be very careful.
I suspect you have three different types of people. You have some that are just looking for conversation, someone to talk to either when they're bored or they're lonely or they just need some companionship or just looking for a friendship. And some that are specifically go in looking for a long-term relationship. And some that are just looking for, I guess as they call it, exotic adventures, whether it be phone sex or just something in person. We always have to question and think about the stability of the people that we're dealing with, rebounding after a relationship, or maybe in a bad abusive relationship or coming out of a divorce. Yes, safety is something you want to think about, making sure that you meet in a public place. Common thing, certainly for people, is to meet for lunch, which makes a lot of sense if you think about it. That way you're together an hour tops. Has anyone used SAMNet, kind of with the goal of either made friends that you communicate with outside of SAMNet or have even signed up under the guise of maybe I'll meet a partner or something here? Has anyone done that?
I never set out to look for a mate, as it were, and if something, you know, happens, it happens, but I'm not pursuing that, as it were. But thanks to SAMNet, it did get me in touch with a couple of people I hadn't talked to in a while that I'm really good friends with and definitely made a couple of new friends.
Would you only date someone who was also blind or visually impaired like yourself, or would insist or really want them to be fully sighted to either compensate for things that you feel you couldn't do yourself? Does anyone in this room actually feel that way?
Yes. Definitely want them visually impaired, totally blind would be good. If somebody's dating somebody that is blind and one of the participants is sighted, I find that sometimes it creates a serious superiority or inferiority thing. Well, the blind person can't do what I can do and I have to take them somewhere to do this and do that. So it kind of creates resentment. It's not really on an equal footing, in my opinion.
Tom?
My wife, she is totally sighted. I did date folks who were totally blind, and I dated sighted. And me personally, I always preferred dating one who is sighted. In terms of inferiority or anything, you have to base a lot in the friendship with that person. There are a lot of strengths and weaknesses that we all have, and there are going to be things that someone can do, whether they're sighted or blind or what, that I cannot do, and there's some things I can do that they won't be able to do. That's part of developing a friendship, and it's part of the give and take in a relationship, whether you're blind or sighted or not.
Was it a social thing? What do you think was the difference?
For me, it was a social thing. And to be quite candid, I was always mainstreamed, and I've always felt more comfortable around sighted folk as opposed to blind folk. That's me. I've never had any issues with blind folk. Try to base people on their own merit. As a social preference, I'm more comfortable around folks who are sighted.
I think I'm the same way, and I think a lot of people are. They just, you know, I'm comfortable around all people. You know, if there is an issue, it's usually something on their end. But per capita, there's certainly many more sighted people than there are fellow visually impaired people, unless you surround yourself in that environment. But what are some of the stereotypes that you dealt with? What are some of the little awkward first moments, you know, little stereotypes that you had to get past in dating a sighted lady?
My wife would be the first to tell you that she was a little apprehensive at first because she just didn't know what to do or how to react. And that kind of stuff was quickly dispelled. There is a little bit of awkwardness if a sighted lady or gentleman, if you're on the other side of it, has not been around a visually impaired or blind person very much. There's a little bit of education, and that's true whether you're looking for a date or if you're looking for a job from a prospective employer. It doesn't matter. It's just a little bit of education if one is not exposed. When I was dating, I pretty well let folks know right up front that I was blind. If they could not deal with that, oh well, their loss.
What are some icebreakers that you found that were effective?
The two biggest icebreakers for me, one was my sense of humor. I'm pretty quick-witted, and I've always got some sort of answer for something. The other major icebreaker for me, I spent a lot of time, and still do, as a church concert performer, and I'm up front in front of people constantly and meeting people. The concerts themselves were good icebreakers for meeting people, especially when I was dating.
Well, I would agree with you. Music is certainly a way that many people have come together, and it really comes down to social skills. Some blind and visually impaired people lack some good social skills, and certainly sighted folks do as well. I'd be curious to kind of know what concerns people have here.
Scott.
Okay, go ahead, Scott.
Terry.
Okay, Scott first, and then Terry.
I've found I don't have like a preference to dating sighted or blind women, but when you sort of talk to someone on these phone services, I just kind of don't know when to tell the person you're talking to that you're blind, but then 'cause you don't want to sort of scare them away. I just wondered what other people thought.
Mike in St. Louis.
I'm going to make a few comments first, and that way, if I echo anything that you wanted to say, Mike, I tried this service as well. And in the ad that I did, I actually stated that I was blind. And I said, I understand some of you ladies that may make uncomfortable, and I understand and respect that. And to you, I wish you well, and may you find what you're looking for. And some things I think that were helpful in getting 30 responses over a 2 or 3 day period was, A, I mentioned the fact that I was employed. Most people aren't expecting you to take care of them, although there certainly are some in that capacity. But they want to know that you can fend for yourself. Interesting when you listen to some of those ads and they'll say, you must have your own place, must have a car. You know, I think it's kind of interesting because either they took those things for granted and then met someone who didn't. Your communication skills and how you can articulate. And I actually wrote down what I was going to say because, you know, when you have 1 minute to kind of describe yourself, that's pretty tough. I mean, how do you describe yourself in 1 minute? How do you get across the points you want to make and, you know, try to sound comfortable and not try to sound egotistical? Or I guess because I worked in radio and I used to talk to ladies on the phone and I would not tell them I was blind and then meet them and then watch them freak out. And I realized it's better just to be upfront about that fact. Mike, your thoughts, sir?
I'm right there with you. I put it in my ad because I figured tell them now and let them hear the ad, because if it's something they do have a problem with, then why waste their time or mine?
Terry, what was your question or comment tonight, sir?
Getting back to the social aspects, the dynamics of things, usually a blind person is a good problem solver, such as being suddenly lost in the community and remaining calm. Being a great communicator is a great asset as a blind person. Usually we are. I think those are admirable skills. Being confident. You know, a good vocabulary is very important, although, you know, that's something socially that a lot of people don't have that much these days. And if you're a good communicator and you demonstrate calm, collective behavior as you're solving problems, because we as blind people are moment by moment problem solvers.
Well, good Lord, I guess if there's a lady you really want to make a good impression on, cook her dinner.
Richard Wells, I want to interject a story that's going to just blow all of your minds about SAMNet and a family member.
Please do. Go ahead and tell the story.
It all began in June of 1969 at Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael, California. My oldest brother, Talmadge, spelled T-A-L-M-A-D-G-E, Wells, went out there to get his first guide dog. He was 16. His only guide dog, actually. It didn't work out that well for him. Basically, what happened, he went out there and he met a young lady by the name of Jan McEwen, who was 3 years older, and they basically really hit it off and got along well. And for the 4 weeks that they were at the guide dog school, he got back to where we lived in Louisiana at the time, and she still lived in California. She was actually attending Berkeley Cal at the time, going to college. And they started a tape correspondence back then. It was all real tapes. That went on for a couple of years, and I got to hear what she sounded like. They were pen pals for a couple of years, and my brother kind of decided, well, this is, you know, not going anywhere. I'm never going to get out to California. We're never going to be able to be together. So he just kind of stopped corresponding and said, you know, this is it. Now we fast forward 40 years later. Jan's husband is passed away about a year and a half ago. His name, of all things, is Charlie Brown. Talmadge is coming out of a bad marriage. On July 6th of this year, I'm handling tech support duties. Who should call upon my phone, or actually in left voicemail in the support cube? About 4:30 in the afternoon of July 6th, I pick up the phone. It was a Monday. I'll never forget it. Call into the voicemail. And there's a lady on there, and she said, my name is Jan Brown. I want to get on the network. I've already paid for it, but I don't know how to install it. Someone please call me back. I called her back. I got her on the phone, and after about less than a minute, I said, did your name used to be McEwen? She said, yes. And she said, who are you? How do you know me? I told her who I was and whose younger brother I was. So we proceeded to get her all installed and working, and she's a happy SAMNet user now. But anyway, she said, would you please tell Talmadge that I want to talk to him? Give him my phone number. And so I emailed Talmadge, I have a surprise for you. And I gave him Jan's information, and the rest, as they say, is history. After 40 years, these two have gotten together, and it all started because Jan's JAWS SMA was expiring. A friend of hers who lives in Lufkin, Texas, Don Shaw, said, why don't you try System Access Mobile Network? You don't want to pay for those SMAs anymore. Why don't you try this? And she went ahead and signed up, even paid a year of SAMNet, and waited a couple of months. And it just happened that it was the week that Brian was gone that this happened. And so I was the one that picked up the call. So you see how all these things came together to make this happen. Needless to say, they are inseparable now. Jen and Talmajar and Samnet played a part in that. It's amazing how small our world has gotten because of social networks like Samnet.
Have any of you met someone through a hobby? I know two people who are married today because they were both on a blind bowling league. Have any of you met or know people who've gotten together through hobbies? Or maybe they were ACB or Scott. NFB members? Or yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Actually, mine is to do with ACB radio. I actually met my current friend Adam's wife, now Diana, through my show on ACB radio. She actually liked all the music that I used to play, and she used to send emails to the request address, and went over to Louisiana and visited her in 2001, and now she's married to my friend Adam, and I gave the bride away at the wedding, so there you go.
Richard, of course, you are a pastor. I don't know how many people know that. Is there anything you'd maybe like to throw in, that things that you've observed, either through life in general or through your pastoral work, things that people might keep in mind when they're pursuing relationships and expectations, keeping things in perspective?
One thing that I would point out, and this is for all those of us who are married and who are very married and intend to stay that way, guard yourself. And be very, very, very visible about your marriedness, about your mate. For those of you who are around me for more than 5 minutes, you're going to hear me say something about my bride of 32 years. It'll be 32 years October the 9th. A fully sighted person. And Lila is my life, and I want to make sure that every, especially female on the network, knows that I'm very married. And guys, girls, all of you, if you are married and you do plan to do a lot of social networking, be very upfront. It will actually help to remind you of who you are and keep your social networking life in perspective. I love hanging around and cutting up with you guys, but at the end of the day, and at the beginning of the day, Lila is where I am. There are a lot of folks out there, and I'm sure some of you who have done any kind of online relationship searching have found that married people will get on these sites, and they will actually look for, you know, extramarital flings or whatever on these things. And I would just say, you know, be very, very, very careful.
Yeah, hopefully they would be honest about that so that you can make an informed decision. But that is a scary proposition that...
Don't take that for granted.
A married woman could look for a blind person thinking, what a great way to have an extra affair. Robert, I'm curious, as a psychologist, if there's anything you could add to the mix of the conversation here. I'm sure I know you work at a university, so I'm sure relationships is something that comes up time and time again, things that people might want to keep in mind as they pursue that kind of connection.
The points that have been made are well taken, good points. I would say that there's an interesting component to online relationships in that there's kind of the artificiality of it, or the less than having to sometimes take responsibility for your actions quite as much as you do in person. For example, I worked with someone once who was into online relationships, and he said the cool thing about it is if things aren't working out very well, I can just press, at that time, you know, Control-Alt-Delete and reboot my machine. And that person is gone. That's a little bit different from actually having to let someone know face to face that, hey, this is not working out. There's an impersonal aspect to it that I guess could happen online or on the phone or in any situation where you're not really dealing with the person face to face. But I would really encourage anyone to take your time, get to know someone. Relationships always have to go through stages. There's kind of the awkward get to know you stage. And, you know, if that works out okay, then maybe move on to a next step, maybe meeting face to face. And if that's okay, maybe move on to a next step of having some meals together. I think a lot of times the online situations can progress very, very fast, and you can sort of fool yourself into thinking that you really know the person and jump right into that honeymoon phase, if you will, where you think that this is the most fabulous human being you've ever met, and he or she might really be, but we all have a good ability to fool ourselves when we start developing an interest in someone and we start feeling that affection and that excitement. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a cool thing to have happen to you, but at the same time, you really need to be able to keep one foot in the reality of, is this really progressing in a way that I can evaluate and make sense of it, and really use my best intuition to say, okay, this is okay with me or it's not. I don't know. Those are just some of the off the top of the head thoughts about it. I've been working in this business for 20 years and it's interesting every day.
Well, I'm curious, 20 years, even though the internet was technically around, it really became popularized in the last 10. So I'm curious how things have changed, because there's some real pros and cons to the whole online element. I'm here, you have the opportunity to meet people from all over the world But again, that comes down to your communication skills. You can spend time really getting to know each other using Skype or some other technology just to talk to each other, you know, exchanging emails. And then you have the other side, you know, just send a Dear John email, which I guess you could argue you could also do on the telephone if they lack the guts or make that face-to-face or want to make that face-to-face communication. So, you know, now I hear a story like Richard's that I think would not conceivably be possible. The internet has opened up so many opportunities for long-lost people to come back and find each other, be it through social networking or, you know, other portals. With anything, I guess, comes the potential for good or evil. But I think the internet has opened up a wealth of opportunity. But, you know, you have things like if people are allowed to have aliases and not use their real name, then that could induce behavior that's not normal.
Probably the biggest thing, honestly, I would say, has been that people who struggle with keeping their own personal boundaries intact a lot of times struggle even more in a situation that the internet provides, where you can have an alias, as you said, or not be necessarily completely truthful. Of course, anyone can do that in any situation. We see situations all the time where people meet on Facebook or online in some capacity, and they wind up in some way disappointed or hurt or upset by what's happened. And it's so much easier in a lot of ways for that to happen, I think, than it was when people met face-to-face Friday night down at the local hamburger spot, kids meeting at the mall or whatever. I mean, sure, things can go wrong anywhere. There's just something really interesting about the ease of meeting someone online and also the ease of hurting someone online, not being quite truthful and then not knowing how to manage that if it feels like the situation is going to go further. I think things have changed an awful lot, really, in terms of communications. Everyone has a cell phone. Everyone almost here at the university is online dealing with people that way. And the boundaries are more permeable and less clear, and people struggle with it, to be honest. At the same time, I would be the first person to say that online, the internet, these kinds of chats have been of tremendous value to me personally and to many, many of us. I honestly think there's more good than bad with this great advance in technology. But people really have to, as Richard said so well, be careful about keeping your perspective, because it's so easy to lose it.
With some of these online phone services, I don't want to give out the wrong sort of vibe here, but I've noticed that some of the ladies that I've heard, they have very deep voices. How do you sort of approach the issue of saying to this lady you wanted to talk to, are you really a full female, if you know what I mean, or have you changed your gender? But you can't really ask them like that, but you don't know whether they once were a male or not, if you know what I mean.
This is Krista in Pennsylvania. I guess your best bet is to just use discretion and, I don't know, maybe try to avoid the really deep-voiced sounding ones because, well, like you said, you never can tell.
I think you really have to use your instincts, and one could argue that a blind person might have a little bit of edge here. Although the downside that we may have as blind people is we may read too much into some of the things that people say.
Tom?
Okay, go ahead, Tom.
This whole internet culture, I work a lot as in ministry as well, as Richard does, primarily with youth. It's kind of interesting about this whole internet culture is that there's a lot of ability to communicate. There's a lot of ability to verbalize, but there's a great lacking in being relational and being vulnerable. I think you have to understand that in today's culture, it's kind of a mosaic type culture, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And if I don't like this, I can move on to something else. And the attention span, you might say, just isn't there. You have to be aware of not only just physical safety, but spiritual and emotional safety. You have to use as a byword in any of this, integrity. The word integrity comes to mind. Be honest and be open about who you are and be real.
Be confident in who you are before you even think about dating, and be able to function by yourself. If you can function by yourself totally, then you will never settle for anything less than what you deserve just to avoid being alone. If you're a Christian, my advice to you would be do not date somebody that is not a Christian. And the reason I say that is you might say, well, we can agree to disagree. It won't compromise my faith. And one of two things is likely to happen if a Christian dates a non-Christian, I think. Not to say it's impossible, but it may cause the Christian to compromise their faith, or it may, who knows, it may cause the non-Christian to become a Christian. But it is a place for potential conflicts. A lot of people make the mistake, I think, when people meet, is they just jump into dating. No. Start out as friends. Don't even think about dating, because studies show that the relationships that last the most are the ones where the people were really good friends first. And the other mistake I think people make is they think, oh, this is great, you know, the first couple of months. And it's like, we were meant for each other. And it's like, you're just getting to know the person. You haven't seen their bad side yet. Once we got to the dating phase, I would date them for at least, not more, but at the very least a year before I would ever think about even an engagement and then take some time before the marriage.
I agree with what Mike said. Whenever Brent and I started dating, actually, we didn't start dating until after we'd known each other for about 5-6 years, and we had been friends for what seemed like forever, and he didn't propose to me until we'd been dating for about 6 months. 2 years after we got engaged, we got married, and it is so important, and I've told so many people too, get to know yourself, be comfortable with yourself. If I get married, great. If I don't get married, oh well. It's all about just taking your time and getting to know the person. Brent and I have been happily married for 3, going on 4 years. We're friends first, and that's the way it's always been for us.
Richard.
Go ahead, Richard.
The only absolute is that there are no absolutes. Lila and I met in late July 1977, and I married her on October 9th, 1977. We met one night, and we didn't see each other for about 3 weeks. And then we met again, and sparks began to fly, and it was just that quick. We both knew where we were in our lives, and no sense messing around. That is great counsel for some. We are the exception to that rather than the rule. I think long engagements are great, too, but also there are people who have long engagements, and they never pull the trigger, and they end up losing someone. There are two sides to that coin.
A lot of the problem is people go into it. I want to find a relationship. I want to find a life partner. And you really, if you're going to be successful, you have to be best friends. And I assume that's part of the great success that Richard and Lila and many other couples share, is that they're truly friends. Obviously, they're in love with each other. But if they didn't connect as friends, there wouldn't be a lot of substance to their relationship. So I think a lot of people go into it. Right. So people go into it, they're bored or they're lonely. And so their judgments are clouded.
However many years you had with your relationship, that's how many months you need to not date anybody.
Well, I do know after my divorce, I made a mistake and jumped into something real quickly. And I remember my boss clearly telling me that the first relationship after a divorce never works. It's always a mess. So apparently there is a big issue with rebound, or we go into it with unrealistic expectations, or we're trying to recreate what we had or what we thought we had.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who've been married for 25 years, and I love the airplane analogy of, they always tell you, make sure you've got your oxygen mask in place before you help someone else with theirs. And several people have echoed this, but the idea is you need to be okay with yourself and doing all right before you decide to add a partner into the mix. That's just my final comment.
Great comment. That's probably the comment of the night right there. Robert really pushed my button on that one, Michael, and I got to tell you why. Because the first year of our marriage, Lila raised me. I mean, I was a little boy when we got married, and she really made a man out of me in ways I couldn't even begin to explain here. And a lesser woman would not have been able to do that. And I wasn't as okay as I should have been when we got married, and God walked us through it and gave her the strength and wisdom and perseverance to get me to where I needed to be, where I could be what she needed.
Well, that's a good point, because a lot of women married say, well, he's really not what I want right now, but I'll mold him and make him what I want to be. And of course, it's all this compromise that people need to go with realistic expectations and communicate early on what they want and be willing to take on, whether it's just household duties or just the willingness to listen to the other person when you have 8 or 9 things on your mind, but they need someone just to hear how they're feeling and dealing with the emotions that they have, and so many issues that we can't even address in the course of an hour. But I want to thank everyone for your great input this evening. I'm sure some folks will get some useful advice out of this. Beginning next week, we are moving the Tech Chats to Accessible Event. That will give us the ability to submit content to you while we're doing the discussion, everything from web pages that give further information on the things that we're covering, and even Word documents and spreadsheets. We hope you'll join us, and we'll have the information and the user forum and the socializer, and of course at serotalk.com, and we will post our first 12 topics that we will be covering for the remainder of 2009 very shortly, so you kind of know where we're going. And of course, you can always give us at any time ideas for tech chats or podcast segments by sending an email to resources@serotalk.com. So again, I thank everyone for joining us this evening, and until we meet again next week, October 1st at accessibleevent.com, at the same time, this is Michael Loff. Let's stay connected and stay directed.